All right, and welcome everyone to another Sunday afternoon here on Revolution Radio. I'm Stephen Robertson. This is Cancel Like a Ball. I have actually two guests on the line right here. The first guest is only going to do about 30 minutes. He's got some health issues, and he's a very busy man to begin with anyways. So I was able to talk him into just a little bit. First, I have Stephen Lendeman. He's a columnist. He's a columnist, syndicated columnist, activist, news TV personality, and radio show host. He currently writes for MoneyNewsNow.com, Veterans Today, and his radio show is on the Progressive Radio News Hour on the Progressive Radio Network. I want to welcome Stephen Lendeman to the show once again. Welcome, Steve.
Oh, Stephen, it's good to be on with you. I must admit, the spirit in my case is very, very willing. The flesh isn't quite what it used to be, but I do the best I can.
Well, that's normally the way things go. For a lot of people here in America, a lot of us are sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Oh, well, indeed. And I don't recommend aging to anybody. I'm 80 years old now. And I hope I've got a lot of good years left. But, you know, the body is just a machine, and it begins wearing out after a while.
It certainly does. Well, I think two of the subjects we wanted to concentrate on are some of your writings here. A lot lately, you've been concentrating on the Ukraine and Israel, haven't you, Stephen?
Oh, I sure have. Very major topics for me, Stephen. Ukraine is extremely important, and I've made the comment to people, I wouldn't try to do this. I don't think I've got the physical endurance to even try, but I've said to people, if I went out on a main street in Chicago and stopped 100 people randomly and asked them a couple of questions about Ukraine, their eyes would probably glaze over, and they wouldn't have any idea what I was talking about. And they should, because Ukraine is the world's hot spot right now. It literally is a flashpoint that is dangerous enough to possibly launch a nuclear war. That's how dangerous Ukraine is. I don't predict anything like that. I don't suggest it'll happen. But the confrontation between America and Russia, aggravated, launched, implemented by Washington, by Obama, and the neocons infesting his administration. These are the people responsible for all of this, from the coup that overthrew Ukraine's democratically elected government to Russia bashing. I phrase it in a lot of ways, Steve, including saying Washington and Kiev irresponsibly blame Putin for their own crimes, and that's exactly what happens.
Sorry, I was going to respond to you there, but I realized I was muted. Yes, they're just from the normal rhetoric of all of the world's medias, they tend to have a scapegoat. And, just because somebody in the media will say something is somebody's fault, it doesn't actually mean that it's true.
Well, that's exactly right. And the issue with Russia is really a very simple one. People need to understand this. It's not that Russia is a bad guy. It's not that Putin is a bad guy. It's that Russia and Putin are independent. And that's the key word. Washington wants every world nation to be a U.S. client state. In other words, for Washington rules to apply, what America says goes, and as long as everybody goes along with America's agenda, they're a loyal, valued ally. Any country that stands up for its own sovereignty and doesn't go along with America's imperial policies, like waging one war after another and ravaging one country after another and literally killing millions of people and turning countries to rubble, any country that doesn't go along with that, any government, any leaders, are automatically bad guys. And Vladimir Putin absolutely opposes this agenda. And he said it in many ways, and he said it publicly. So he draws America's ire. During the 1990s, when Boris Yeltsin was a president, he was nothing more than a U.S. stooge. And we had the age of the oligarchs in Russia stealing the country blind. We had U.S. Shock therapy. impoverishing millions of Russians so that rich people could get richer is the best way to explain it. Western corporations, Russian oligarchs, and the rest are conspiring with each other to take advantage of Russia's great wealth, its resources, and just harming, imposing great harm on millions and millions of Russian people, and they haven't recovered. It could take another generation for them to recover from the damage that was done in the 1990s. And Putin, I really believe, is trying to do this. He's doing all he can. He's been around a good while. His term extends until, I believe, 2018. I believe he can run one more time for re-election. He's still reasonably young. It's a good thing he's around, Stephen, because if he wasn't, if we had a Yeltsin type in Russia, then Russia would be a satellite. It would be exploited again. America would have a rival it didn't have to worry about. It wouldn't be a rival anymore, and it could concentrate fully on China to do the same thing to China that it's been doing to Syria, to Iraq, to Afghanistan, ideally short of going to war. Those other countries should have been pushovers. They weren't, but they should have been. But Russia and China are completely different. They're powerful countries, certainly militarily and economically as well, and these countries are not easy to take on confrontationally. But America is doing it politically, doing it economically. I don't know where this will lead, Stephen, but the risk that we could have a nuclear war is the greatest of my lifetime.
Oh, absolutely. Stephen, you know, I wanted to make the follow-up comment that America, as the oligarchical colonizationists, or the sheriffs of the world, they keep the interest of the corporation above the interest of the people. But Britain and Israel also seems to do that also, do that same type of thing.
Oh, there's no question about that. You named the three most unequal countries among developed ones: America, Israel, and Britain. Of all the developed countries in the world, including Japan and the Western European countries, a few others, I don't know the exact number, but all the developed ones, the three most unequal are America. Yeah, I'm talking about socially, in terms of the unequal spread of wealth in the countries: America, Britain, and Israel. And to me, that's the real axis of evil, those three countries.
Certainly is. Let's get into the Ukraine. What is the corporate interest that is being pursued over there at this moment?
Ukraine is a continuation of what happened when the Soviet Union dissolved. America, I believe, there were a number of meetings between the Russian leaders and the U.S. leaders. Bush Sr. met with Mikhail Gorbachev. His Secretary of State, James Baker, met with Gorbachev. And a promise was made to Gorbachev that America would not extend its influence one inch, I believe that was the phraseology used, not extend it one inch east. And all America has done since 1991 is go after one former Soviet republic and Warsaw Pact country after another, getting them incorporated into the EU, into NATO, and a few big ones remain. Georgia remains outside of NATO, not an EU country. I don't think it ever will be an EU country. The big one is Ukraine. Ukraine is a huge country in Central Europe. It has rich agricultural land. It's called the breadbasket of Europe for good reason. And at the same time, it is so economically bankrupt at the present time that it can't even feed its own people, which is another story entirely. But the idea is to get all these countries in the Western camp, get them into NATO, line them up against Russia, establish U.S. bases right on Russia's borders, threatening its heartland, doing everything America can do to marginalize, to weaken, to isolate Russia, with the goal of overthrowing its government, changing it, putting in a U.S. stooge government that serves U.S. interests, and ideally doing it short of war. But Russia will never accede to U.S. interests. Putin has said it. Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has said it in different ways, in language like, no country in world history ever defeated Russia, not Hitler, not Napoleon, and neither will America. And I believe that, so we can end up with America failing in all its attempts to get rid of Russia's independent government. we could end up with a nuclear war. And if we have that, all bets are off.
Yes, absolutely, Stephen. I have read and seen statistical evidence that Russia is actually much more of a capitalistic society than what America is. And America is much more of a communistic or socialistic society than what Russia was 25, 30 years ago.
Well, I know exactly what you're talking about. The phrase others have used, and I use it as well, is socialism for the rich and free market capitalism for everybody else.
Yes.
In other words, all the poor folks, you, me, Isaac, you, me, Stephen, we're all the poor folks, and we're on our own. We have to get by the free market, but the free market isn't free. When they talk about a free market, what they don't say is it is a fair market. There's no such thing as a fair market. It's rigged, whether you're talking about Wall Street rigging the financial markets, the commodity markets, the currency markets, or the big corporations rigging the markets that they control. Grand theft. This is the system, and they get it. And when they get in trouble, we know what happens. They get bailed out, and we get sold out.
Yes. Speaking of Isaac also, Stephen, I want to welcome Isaac to the show, Isaac Witham, who will be my guest just after you leave us. Isaac, do you have anything to add, or would you like to ask something?
Well, you know, I think that the caliber of individual of a man like David Stockman, this isn't a conspiracy theorist. This is a cabinet level part of the presidential administration. I believe both Reagan and Clinton, I could be wrong, correct me if I am, but Stockman refers to our currency as phony, baloney money. And if we've got a nation that's operating on quantitative easing script, you just got to stop and ask yourself a question. Who are the puppet masters? I mean, we're operating on completely phony money. Something is horribly wrong.
Well, I absolutely agree. And another phrase that Stockman uses is calling quantitative easing monetary heroin. Oh, I love that phrase. I wish I thought of it. That's exactly right. It does absolutely nothing for the economy. It does you pour money into the system. It does everything for big investors, including corporations that buy back their own stock. And you get the financial markets going wild, going up. In my lifetime, I don't recall a bull market like the one that we're having right now. But there was a former Fed chairman who was responsible compared to the phony balonies that have run the Fed since Alan Greenspan and then Bernanke and now Janet Yellen, pouring this phony money, this monetary heroin into the system to make rich people richer. I mean, how many billions do you need? You make them richer, and it's coming at the expense of ordinary people. The wealth disparity in America is the greatest, maybe the greatest ever. I don't know what the wealth, there were no statistics going back in the 19th century the way they are now, but I think in the history of financial statistics in America, the wealth disparity in this country is absolutely unprecedented, and it keeps getting worse and worse. There's no such thing as a recovered economy. We have a Main Street depression going on that the major media refuses to talk about, and that's exactly what's going on. Unemployment, it's not the phony 5.5%, it's over 23%. In the Great Depression, was 25%. So we have Great Depression unemployment in the country. There's something like 90 million Americans who would like to have a job but can't find them. In an article I wrote in the last week or so, I mentioned unemployment among black youths aged 16 to 19 in Chicago. I couldn't believe the number, but it came from the Chicago Urban League. 90% black unemployment in youths 16 to 19, and I think, and in youths overall, I think up to age 24, I think the number was 82%. I don't know how you keep a revolution from breaking out with numbers like this. And my feeling is that a revolution will break out. I remember the 1960s, the cities burned, inner cities burned. I think we could see that happen again, except maybe this time downtown areas will burn, and the people that are stealing the futures of ordinary people who have none at all because of their malfeasance. Maybe they'll see their buildings burn and their businesses burn. We could really have something terrible happening. I hope it doesn't happen. But the people running America today are responsible for this. They're handing all the wealth to the people I call the moneyed interest, and they're screwing everybody else, and they're waging all of these wars that could lead to a nuclear war. Talk about irresponsibility.
Yes, absolutely, Stephen. About 11 or 12 years ago, I actually had a school friend. I've been graduated for almost 34 years now, but I was actually getting mutual funds from him and his friend. They had started up a small company around this area, and they were trying to, you know, start a business. And it was going kind of okay, but I got some mutual funds from him, and he actually admitted to me one day that mutual funds and stuff like that were just metaphorically robbing Peter to pay Paul. They would get money from one customer to cover the money that they were betting on some other customer's money.
And sounds like a Bernie Madoff Ponzi scheme.
Sounds like a Bernie Madoff Ponzi scheme. But of course, we all know that Bernie Madoff, he would still be doing the same thing that he's doing, or that he did. He just stole from the wrong people. He stole from his higher ups is what he stole from.
Oh, he sure did, and I think he made some mistakes. I mean, and people knew what he was doing. They just didn't say anything about it because they were all in on the dirty racket making money.
Yes, they were. With this last 10 minutes, I guess we could probably go into a little bit of what is happening with Israel and Bibi Netanyahu.
Well, there's an election coming up on Tuesday on March 17th. Netanyahu is behind in the polls. Israel has multi-parties. Unlike America, that you basically have two parties. You have some independents running, but they're virtually nobody's. They get no votes at all. There are about a dozen parties competing in Israel. And the names change from election to election. There's a brand new one that is leading in the polls right now. They vote differently in Israel. They vote for parties. They'll elect members to the Israeli parliament called the Knesset, 120 seats. The leading party is called the Zionist Union. There was no Zionist Union in the last Knesset election, but there is this time. And the Zionist Union only has 24, a poll show it has 24 votes, 24 seats. In next Tuesday's, it'll get 24 seats in next Tuesday's election. And the Netanyahu's party is Likud, extremely right-wing. Zionist Union isn't exactly left-wing. They call it the moderate party, but it's not moderate at all. It may be a smidgen less right-wing than Netanyahu, but there isn't really a dime's worth of difference between them. Netanyahu, the polls show, has about 20 seats. But he could lose the Zionist Union and still end up being prime minister. Israel has never had a single party win a majority vote in an election. So all of Israeli governments are coalition governments, and that'll be the case this time. So Netanyahu can promise other hardline parties to get so many votes, top positions in his administration, defense, foreign ministry, finance, things like that, and cobble together a coalition government, even if he comes in second, and he could end up remaining prime minister.
That's pretty wild. You know, over this last decade or so, maybe even a little bit longer, there's been a movement in the Jewish communities here in America. I know that there's a lot of power. I mean, there's actually a power struggle between people that... people that want liberty and people that want freedom from war, the American interest and the Israeli interest is to more or less rid the world of Palestine and some of the other Arab countries. How do you see this power struggle coming?
Well, number one, one of the great open secrets about Israel is it's nuclear armed and dangerous. It's had nuclear weapons for decades. And I think anybody paying attention knows that, but nobody in Israel talks about it. The major media, the Western media, at least, don't talk about it. But Israel is nuclear armed and dangerous. It wants to be the regional hegemon. It wants to get rid of all its rivals, which is one reason for the war in Iraq, the war in Syria, both of them, Iraq, Obama's, Bush's wars, and now we've got Iraq War 3, two Bush's wars, Bush 1 and Bush 2, and the war going on now in Iraq is Obama's war. Syria is Obama's war. It's not a civil war. It's Obama's war with imported terrorists. These ISIS characters are recruited by America, armed and trained and so on, and the enemy is Assad because of its independence. Turkey is a rival government. There's friction between Israel and Turkey. The big rival is Iran, and that's why Netanyahu does not want an Iranian nuclear deal. And everybody knows, based on intelligence reports, including Israel's Mossad and 16 U.S. intelligence agencies that come out with an annual report, that there is not a shred of evidence to suggest that Iran has a nuclear program or even wants one. So this is very well known, and the reason Netanyahu and the people in Washington go after Iran, and all of these talks are going on to resolve a situation that needs no resolution, is the ultimate objective is to get rid of Iran's independent government and put in a pro-Western stooge one. For Israel, it would mean getting rid of a regional rival, and for America, it would be another client state. And that's what all of this hocus-pocus is about. And I'll frankly be surprised if there's a nuclear deal between the so-called P5 plus one countries, the permanent members of the Security Council, and Iran. It may happen. It may happen, Stephen, because Obama's record has nothing to show for it. When he leaves office, I think he would like something in his legacy to show for. Obamacare will go down as a flaming defeat once enough people realize they've been had. So he's got nothing to show but permanent wars. If he could bring about rapprochement with Iran, then his legacy would show he undid 35, 36 years of hostility, but it's still, to me, long odds to get this done. It could get done, but to me, it seems long odds. But this may be his motivation. But again, Iran has no nuclear program. It threatens no one. It hasn't attacked another country in centuries. And yet Israel and Washington are allied to bash Iran as much as possible. And Israel is a threat to go after Iran the way it did against Iraq in the 1980s when it bombed its nuclear reactor. And I wouldn't put it past any Israeli leader to bomb Iran's nuclear program, but if it did, it would have a much tougher adversary than Iraq. Iraq did nothing when its reactor was bombed, but Iran is more powerful, the weapons are more developed, and Israel would certainly face serious retaliation. I think it knows that. Who win next Tuesday, Stephen? As far as Palestinians go, it doesn't matter one way or the other. They will still be persecuted. They'll get nothing out of the election. The Palestinians elected to the Knesset are treated like potted plants. They have no power at all. They may win 10 seats. If they're lucky, maybe 12 seats out of 120. They're abused in the Knesset. At times, they're attacked. They face all kinds of abuse and mistreatment. And for Palestinians in the West Bank and in Gaza, on Tuesday, the one thing that is sure is that Palestinians will lose and business as usual will go on. It doesn't matter whether it's Netanyahu or whether it's Isaac Herzog, the leader of the Zionist Union Party, his partner, Tzipi Livni, former foreign minister of Israel. They're supposed to switch roles as prime minister if they had the coalition. So we'll wait and see what happens. But again, for Palestinians, it means nothing.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, there also seems to be a covert alliance with Saudi Arabia in there also. They seem to be helping Israel behind the scenes or just outright at times.
Oh, absolutely. Astonishing. Over a year ago now, I forget the date, but I wrote about it, Prince Bandar, the former intelligence chief of Saudi Arabia, made a covert visit to Israel. I mean, on the surface, Saudi Arabia and Israel have no relations whatsoever. Supposedly, they're arch enemies, and yet Prince Bandar, very close to the top in Saudi Arabia, made a covert visit to Israel to align up, apparently, against Russia and for their regional mutual interests. And this is what the meeting was all about. So the idea that Saudi Arabia and Israel are arch enemies. Well, maybe on some things, but certainly not when it comes to the interests they have in the region, which is against the interests of everybody else in the region, the ordinary people of the region, I should say so. So apparently Saudi Arabia and Israel are good allies now.
Yes. Well, I don't really want to keep you more than your 30 minutes that you would like, that you wanted, Steve. But if you would like to finish up with a couple minutes here, I'll go ahead and let you.
I'll just make one final comment. Well, I'll watch and see what happens on Tuesday, Stephen. I just quickly wrote an article that I finished just before we went on air. There are irresponsible rumors circulating about Vladimir Putin. He hasn't been seen in public for about a week. He canceled a visit to visit one country. He was supposed to sign a treaty. He postponed doing it. And all kinds of crazy rumors are circulating. Everything from he's ill, to a coup that hasn't been revealed yet, to he's off visiting a woman he knows on the occasion of the apparent birth of her child, the media calling the child Putin's love child. And the final rumor is he's dead. Well, I published an article and I titled it Irresponsible Putin Rumors. The same thing happened in 2012. There were rumors about that he was ill in November 2012. In December, he appeared in a news conference. He dispelled all of the rumors. He wasn't ill. He was fine. Maybe now he's just taking a break. I don't know where he is. There was a report in a Russian media. I don't have the name in front of me. I don't want to try to pronounce it. I'll do it wrong. But the media suggested he was at it may be a vacation home he has in a province outside of Moscow. But I think he will surface publicly and on television when it suits him, when it's appropriate to do so. And I remember when Bush was president here, Bush Jr. was president, it seemed to me he spent more time in Texas than in Washington. And if Putin just got away to take a break for a few days, to go fishing or do something, well, I say give the guy a break. He'll surface in public when he wants to, and everything will be fine. But all the rumors circulating, including in the New York Times, I think they'll all turn out to be rubbish. So I just had to write a very short article about it and just try to dispel this kind of stuff. And I made the comment that if it was almost anybody but Putin, you wouldn't even see anything said about it.
Well, certainly. And also, at the end of the day, does it really matter where he was or where he is or what he's doing?
No. And he could be anywhere. He could be in another part of Russia. He could be out of a country. And he could be conducting important business by secured line, by the ways that leaders conduct their business with their other officials and so on. When Obama takes a trip to Hawaii, it doesn't mean that he's out of touch with people in Washington. If there's something that needs tending to, he does it, no matter where he is. And I'm certain Putin is doing exactly the same thing now. Nothing is escaping him. Important business is being done. And if he cancels a trip or postpones a trip to get together with another leader, it's for a good reason. And he'll simply reschedule it and do it. It's nothing to be concerned about. And if something really were wrong, I think we'd know about it by now.
Sure, absolutely. But actually what I meant was I think it's just a big distraction, a news item for the pundits to ponder over for a whole week. But
absolutely. And it's another excuse to beat up on him.
Yes, yes. Well, why don't you...
Irresponsibly. One final comment and I'll get off.
Sure.
Stephen. There is no question, because I follow this on a regular basis. I've literally written hundreds of articles on Ukraine. There is no world leader who has done more to resolve the Ukrainian crisis diplomatically, to end this war, to resolve things responsibly for all sides. It's Vladimir Putin and his foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov. He deserves a Nobel Peace Prize along with Lavrov. He'll never get it, because he's beaten up on so irresponsibly. And the one nation, more than any other, that wants the war continued, that launched the war and wants it continued, and I believe will resume the war, is Obama in Washington. He overthrew the democratic government in Ukraine, he installed Nazis taking their place, illegitimate putschists. They launched an illegal war of aggression. The people in the southeastern part of Ukraine, the Donbass area, Luhansk and Donetsk, they're freedom fighters. The only thing they want is democratic rights that everybody deserves. They reject fascist rule. Everybody should reject fascist rule. Putin rejects fascist rule, but he rejects interfering in the internal affairs of other countries. There are no Russian forces in Ukraine. And the head of Ukraine's military made that statement on national television, but you'll never see it reported in the U.S. media.
Certainly. Why don't you remind us again of all your websites and where somebody can see all your writings at, Stephen?
Well, I have a blog site anybody can access just by Googling my last name, Lendman, L-E-N-D-M-A-N. And I set it up originally just to keep my articles in alphabetical order for my own use and reference. But a lot of people use it now, and I don't take comments on my blog site, but I put my email address on the bottom of all my articles. And if anybody wants to make a comment, they can email me and they'll get a response. But anybody can follow everything I do by going to my blog site. I have a radio program, the Progressive Radio News Hour. It's in hiatus right now because Progressive Radio had a blowout in their studio. They had a pipe break and they were flooded out, and I'm waiting for them to get back. They're slowly getting back into business again, and I'm waiting for the word to come back when I can get back on air. I've lost a lot of programs, Stephen.
Well, goodness, that's a shame there.
It really is a shame, but I'll wait for them to get back, and they'll get me back on again.
Yes. Well, all right. I will go ahead and let you go. You're a very busy man, and you need to get things done.
Stephen, I thank you very much.
All right. Have a good day over there.
Thanks.